You might have noticed that was not Ramona Settegrin reading the scripture today. She wasn't feeling well. That is Grandpa Todd Lahren. This morning, I'm really excited to introduce to you a friend who's coming to preach today. His name is Dr. Jim Bilby. Jim is a professor of biblical and theological studies at Bethel University. He has 13 books published and one on the way in April, which I'm sure he can point you to at Amazon or your favorite independent bookseller. Jim teaches apologetics, ethics, and Christian theology, among a few other things at Bethel. But if you really want to tap into his expertise, I would recommend asking him about J.R.R. Tolkien, or just ask him what he thinks about the sport called disc golf. Those are his favorites. The best thing, though, that I can say about Jim Bilby is that he's my friend. And that's because he married one of my closest friends many years ago, and we've been able to share life and care and prayer for our children together. And Jim is the first person that I thought of when I was looking ahead to this Sunday, to this week in our Holy Road series as we think about the way of the mind. And I'm happy to welcome Jim here as he tells us what it means to him to love God with one's mind.
Well, I'm happy to be here. I'll start initially by acknowledging some potential fear or trepidation you may have when you heard that I'm a professor at Bethel University. The idea of me being a professor, you might realize, and this would be true, by the way, that I never get up to talk to anybody without having at least 50 minutes. And I've also been known to, like, give pop quizzes after I speak. So if you're afraid about that, it's a completely justified fear. I understand that. I am thankful to be here. I'm especially thankful to be here to talk about this subject. I think it's a really important one. I think it's an interesting one. When Chris asked me to talk about this, I was like, this might be kind of fun for me as well. I spend a lot of time thinking about this big idea and that big idea and how to put all those big ideas together. And this kind of makes me look at myself a little bit. And that can always be really, really helpful. And so I'm excited about this idea. Everybody is a little different in terms of how we're wired, in terms of how we're raised. The soil that produces our life is this really complicated thing. And I'm not going to pretend to speak for every single person who has this emphasis on the life of the mind. There might be a little bit differences here and there, but I'm just going to introduce you to my story a little bit to give you a sense of kind of how I'm wired and how I approach my faith. I came from a very, very academic family. The question was not if we were going to go to college and get advanced degrees, it which degrees and how many. In my family, there are four master's degrees, family of four, three doctorates, and my mom, who we might be tempted to pick on as the only one who doesn't have a doctorate, can point out that her master's thesis was almost twice as long as my dad's doctoral dissertation. Plus, nobody would go after my mom like that. That would inspire some fear. So, but even amongst my family, I was a little different. And different in the sense that I just had questions. I had questions about everyday silly things, and I had questions about the faith. So I remember going to Sunday school. Oh my goodness, I terrorized my Sunday school teachers. It wasn't like a mean, intentional like thing. It's that I just had a tendency to ask questions like, you say Jesus is fully God and fully human. How is that possible? Can you explain that? You say God is three persons, but also one God. That doesn't seem mathematically possible. You say that God desires all people to be saved, but there's got to be millions and millions and millions of people that have never even heard about the person of Jesus. What's the deal with that? And more like that. I just had so many questions. And these questions didn't come, at least initially, from a place of skepticism or like, oh, this is silly. It came from a place of, hey, I'm taking this really, really seriously, but I don't understand this, and I don't understand this, and I want to understand this. So I had these questions, and they drove me. And even though they initially didn't have a skeptical edge, sometimes I saw that these questions were kind of just dismissed. People didn't really want to answer these questions, and I just was confused by that because I thought these were important questions. I thought these questions were worth engaging. And then sometimes I did get some answers to these questions, and I was like, really? That's the answer? I remember a very specific moment with my youth pastor. We were talking about something about the problem of evil. And he said, well, I just think of it this way. And I just remember saying to him, that actually works for you. And again, it wasn't a mean or a kind of a nasty way. It was just, I was flabbergasted that that worked for him in his mind. Because what he was saying just did not work for me. During this time, growing up especially into college, I also really struggled with just feeling odd. Different. Not like other people. So often I heard, okay, to be a good Christian, this is what you look like. And I saw modeled, you know, people, you know, singing worship songs and having just this rapturous experience with God through musical worship. And I was just like, I'm not having any of that. Right? I struggled with the idea of worship. I did not have the same experience that everybody had. Right? And what's more, sometimes when we'd be worship, I'd be like reading the words and I'm like, Now, please understand this. I'm not saying this in any way to critique, but perfect submission, perfect delight, visions of rapture now burst on my sight. Angels descending bring from above echoes of mercy, whispers of love. 16-year-old me would have been like, I've never had anything remotely like that. And so the point is, I get caught up in this. Oh no, what's wrong with me? Am I not a good Christian? Maybe I don't really love God. I certainly sin pretty well, but maybe I don't follow God pretty well. And it's hard to take seriously something that you kind of think you're bad at. Another example is I had people talking to me about what it means to follow God. It means you have a daily quiet time, and that involves prayer. And I think the idea of prayer, by the way, is super, super important. But when I had this idea introduced to me, I said, okay, what you need to do is you need to get down on your knees, and you need to pray for at least 20 or 30 minutes. And I would try this. I mean, I wasn't a slacker. I was willing to do the work. I would try this, and I would start my prayer, and I'd be praying along, and all of a sudden, sometimes 30 seconds in, I would realize that I wasn't praying anymore, but I was theologically analyzing the thing that I just said in my prayer, where I'm praying, and then I'm suddenly, wait, can I say that? Does that make me a Calvinist? And suddenly, I'm thinking about some theological idea, and I'm like, oh, shoot, no, I'm supposed to be praying. And I'd stop, and I'm like, okay, God, and then 30 seconds later, I'd be off on another thing as well. And I remember talking to some people about this. And sometimes people just kind of, yeah, I don't have that experience. And I kind of felt, well, maybe, again, I'm the problem. And again, it is very difficult to get yourself to fully engage something that you think you're terrible at. For instance, let's say you never play basketball and you go out and you're trying to play basketball and it's just not going really well for you. That's not going to be a daily occurrence for you then. But this was my faith that we were talking about here, and I could not shake the sense that I just didn't quite do it the way I should. I wasn't a good Christian. I was, through college, planning on going to law school. So my first love was history. I took a business law class and absolutely just loved studying law. And so that's the direction I was going. But that got derailed. Two things derailed that. Actually, first was just shadowing a lawyer. By the way, as a good practical piece of advice, when you're deciding, younger people, if you're deciding, you know, what career you're going to go into, you should not only figure out what it takes to study to get there, you should figure out what the actual job looks like. I actually looked at what the actual job looked like, and it looked like endless meetings designing, you know, trying to increase billable hours. And I was horrified by that. So I'm like, oh no, what am I going to do? I'm coming up on graduation and I don't know what I want to do. And then my senior year, my football coach died of cancer. He was diagnosed with cancer, was given 6 months to live, but he stretched dying out over 2 years and five bouts of chemotherapy. Took him from a guy who was like 6'2", 240, and could pick up an offensive lineman by the back of the shoulder pads, by the back of the pants, and lift him off the ground, to somebody who did not have the strength to say the prayer that we closed Friday practice with. That just blew me up. I understood that bad things happen in the world, but in a world where he felt like one of the truly authentic Christians, I couldn't imagine God taking him. So, for the better part of a year, I was an atheist. I was also thoroughly depressed. Not knowing what I was going to do when I graduated. Trying for my entire life to be a Christian, but feeling terrible at it. Having this devastating experience that shook my faith to the foundations. At the time, I was dating this girl, and we broke up, and we were kind of talking about why we broke up, and her answer was, well, after your coach died, you just went away, right? So there was there were layers of things going on here, but at the bottom of them were fundamental questions about who I was and whether I could be a Christian. Now, I actually ended up going to seminary to figure out what I thought about God. Why would I do that? Because that's somebody who's that's how somebody who's really academically wired would engage this sort of thing, right? So I figured the right way to do this is to study more, and I did, and that was powerful, helpful, and I did ultimately decide that law school, no way. What I want to do is I want to study theology. These issues are the things that are most interesting. And about 2 weeks later, I decided I could be a Christian doing it. Did I come back to faith because I came up with a perfect answer to the problem of evil? No. I wish I could say that there was this nice, neat, silver bullet answer that I came up with that I could give to you today. But I did realize three things. First, the atheistic answers to life's big questions were no better and were probably a lot worse. And today, I would argue, I think that they're a lot worse. Second, I realized that there were some brilliant Christians writing on these issues that I had struggled with my entire life. There were answers out there, or at least I had hope that there were answers out there. And hope is a powerful thing, right? It gave me something to do, a task to lean into, to try to understand these things and then try to help other people understand these things. And maybe the most powerful thing, somewhere along the way, I realized that my expression of faith didn't have to look like everybody else's. That I was okay being weird. And what helped me be okay being weird is that I had a sense that I have a job to do. I'm that weird guy that studies the metaphysics of the Trinity so I can help other people understand the faith, right? So one of the most powerful things was me letting myself get to a place where, a lot of other people have different approaches and they appreciate God in this way and that way, and that's just great. And that has sent me on a path where for the last 28 years, well, there's a whole bunch of school even before that, right? And then for the last 28 years, it's been my honor to teach students and to help them think about the faith and to help them work through their questions in whatever way they need to do that. Let me shift to a couple of clarifications here, though, because I want to be sure that what I'm saying, that you're not going to misunderstand this. The first clarification is I'm not in any way saying that I'm wired intellectually, and therefore I think about my faith, and therefore if you're not wired intellectually, you don't think about your faith. I think everybody thinks about their faith to some degree, right? everybody has at least sort of a bare minimum engagement intellectually with their faith, right? So that's my assumption. However, whatever other road you are on, it's not that the intellectual dimension is completely lacking, right? Just as for me, these other dimensions, it's not that they're completely lacking either. The other one, the seeing God in nature sort of thing, that's a really powerful thing for me as well. Like, worship has always been far more, for me, less musical worship and far more walking through the woods, right? So just because I kind of come from this life of the mind, I don't want to give you the sense that I think that I'm the only one who really thinks, right? The difference, I think, comes in the fact that I can't avoid it. Literally, I can't avoid it. I have this incredibly high need to not just think about things, but to think about things in this way, in this way, in this way. And if there's unanswered questions somewhere in the vicinity, it drives me crazy. Now, as I've grown up a little bit, I've realized that what I just said there is a path to craziness. Right? And also, if you really think about God, as I hope we're doing, the most reasonable thing you could say about God is that eventually there might be some things that we won't understand about God. So my intellectual focus is perfectly compatible with acknowledging there are some things that may remain mysterious to us. We may not fully understand who God is and be able to answer every single possible question. But for me, if there's a question out there that I think it can be answered, I'm after it. And it's the need to do that that I think sets off, that highlights this intellectual approach that we're talking about here. I also want to clarify that I think people who have this intellectual way of life are not necessarily smarter than people who do not. Intelligence is a rich and many splendored thing anyway. Right? We spend way too much time talking about IQ, right? Or even specific versions of IQ, mathematical reasoning or spatial reasoning or something like that. Intelligence is a very, very complicated thing. So this isn't at all a suggestion, and I don't want you to hear or hear implied that if you don't have an intellectual focus in the faith, that you're just not able to or something like that. I don't think that's true at all. I think that's utterly false. And the last thing, last clarification is, I'm not at all unemotional about my faith. You can ask my family, some of which that are here. I'm probably, of the six of us, one of the most emotional. Right? Emotions are a really big deal for me. But the thing is, I almost never get led into God's presence by my emotions. I get led into God's presence with my mind. And if I'm in a place where my mind is sort of comfortable and like I kind of get it, then my emotions can kind of come out and be what they are. But that's maybe sometimes kind of rare. But it's not at all that my emotions aren't in play. It's just a little harder to get there. Got to navigate some things to get there. A couple of challenges or difficulties about the life of the mind. This sort of approach. And some of these I think I'm going to will be taken as, I want to offer them as challenges to those of you who think that you also have this approach. First, and I already alluded to this in kind of in my story, sometimes it's lonely. It's lonely because there are many, many people who have a really, really intellectual emphasis that are not here today. And they're not in any church. They are, they have been in one shape, way, or form driven away from the faith. My students, and not just my students at Bethel, but people that are college age, so the demographic even expanded out a little bit, 18 to 35. You've heard of the concept of the nuns? It's when people are asked, What is your religious affiliation? There's a box at the bottom that says none. When I was growing up, when I was in high school, the 18 to 35 year olds that would have said they had no religious affiliation, around 12 to 15%. Right now, up to 40% of 18 to 35 year olds list no religious affiliation. Now, that doesn't mean they're all atheists, but it means that they have been driven away from formal expressions of church, sometimes because their intellectual focus has not felt rewarded, or in some cases, it's felt demonized. So many of us who are wired more intellectually have just found it difficult to be in community with other Christians and have left. And so it can be a lonely place. And for those of us who try to stay, sometimes the questions that we raise, and I'll state it sort of minimally here, are not always fully appreciated. Sometimes people don't want us to ask this question or that question about theological matters, or even in the life of a church, you know, about this or that thing, right? When you have this sort of like, no, I want to rip and understand this all apart, sometimes that runs afoul of people who want to know, let's make things smooth, right? And so it can be challenging to live in community when you feel like the gift that you have makes other people uncomfortable. And for people who really do care about people, as at my best, I certainly do, that's bothersome. Sometimes it's easier to just leave and not be that difficult person. The final challenge, and this is an important one, is for people that are intellectually wired, there's always a danger for arrogance and dismissiveness. Arrogance like, oh, I'm the one that thinks through these things. Nobody else does. Or, you know, yeah, I've looked at this issue in this way, in this way, in this way, and nobody else has done that, so I know more than them. Or, these people don't think about this, so I don't trust their reasoning or their thoughts on this. And nothing could be more, not just more false, but more toxic to the person that's having that thought. So for those of you that are wired more intellectually, I want to encourage you to, for instance, when you're listening to a praise song and you're like, okay, this isn't really maybe hitting me right where I'm at. This isn't like a powerful worship experience for me. Look around and see somebody else with their face lit up as they sing this song. And say, thank you, God, for letting that person connect in this way. That's awesome. How they connect with God, that is awesome and that is cool and that is powerful. Even though it's not my way of connecting to that, don't let yourself be dismissive to how other people do that. Because the very thing, if you let yourself do that, you're doing the very thing to them that you've always been frustrated that they have done to you, being dismissive about your intellectual approach. Last thing, a couple of comments to close with. What can churches do to support people who have this life of the mind? Is the answer to, and please, let's say this is it just for fun. Should we all do in-depth sermons on the metaphysics of the Trinity? Can we please get Chris to do this? Because I just would like that. That would be fun for me. Although that would be fun. To be perfectly honest, that's not the answer. I'm not convinced that intellectualizing the sermons and making the church a bastion of intellectual inquiry and do close readings of Thomas Aquinas' Summa Theologica, I don't think that's the answer here. Why? Because how many people would actually benefit from that? I mean, even me on some of my days, Thomas Aquinas is a little much to read, right? Very few people would appreciate that, would actually learn from that, right? So whatever the answer is, I don't think it's just shifting to an intellectual reductionism where everything we do is down this intellectual dimension, because it is not helpful for the body, the life of the church. The most important thing that I think churches can do to help foster the life of the mind is to realize that questions about the faith and even doubts are not bad. Questions are not a bad thing. They're not a problem. They're not something to be stamped out. Questions are the fuel for growth for people like me, and by the way, I think for people who are not even like me. Questions give us an opportunity to press into something new, to try to understand that, to try to integrate it into our life, and then benefit from that new knowledge. So questions are not scary. Encourage them. I tell my students every single semester, if you tell me you don't know what to think about Trinity and you don't know what to think about this and you got all these different questions, you scare me way less than somebody that comes to me and says they got it all figured out. Because the only way somebody's going to have the Christian faith all figured out is if they're not thinking. Questions are not the problem. Third, try to avoid definitions of faith that assume not having knowledge is a good thing. We have so many different weird definitions of faith. From our culture, Mark Twain's definition stands out as a great example. He said, "Faith is believing what you know ain't so." That's a really bad definition. And if it's true, it leaves people like me completely on the outside. Because if I think it ain't so, I can't get my heart to do anything with it. I can't. Not just that I kind of struggle, I literally cannot. A better definition of faith is whatever your level of knowledge, however much belief you have, however much, how many arguments you have for aspects of the faith, the question of faith is, what do you do with that? Do you step out in commitment? Do you follow what God is doing and weave it into every aspect of your life? That's what faith is. Faith is a confidence in action, doing something about this. Faith is not just knowledge or lack of knowledge. Finally, the church can benefit from finding ways to let people like me, who are wired intellectually, to use their gifts. To teach Sunday school classes. To lead book clubs. Right? Now, granted, somebody leads a book club, again, on Thomas Aquinas or something silly like that. We're not talking about packing out the auditorium here. It might be pretty small. And yeah, and the benefits and outcomes of that, will that be life transformative? Maybe it could be really kind of nice, but I'm not sure it's going to be the most important thing in the Christian walk of all of these people. But it can be really powerful for that person who's leading it. Right? It can be transformative to actually have something that they can do for their faith. And I'll close with this comment. If I would not have had the opportunity to teach, again, over 28 years, over 6,000 students, if I would not have the opportunity to teach, I wouldn't have been able to maintain my faith. That having that thing that I could do to pour into people to help them, that has been what has animated me and that has kept me fully engaged. And I think it is such an important thing. Christianity is, yes, supposed to be a mind thing and it's supposed to be a heart thing, but it has to be a hands thing. There has to be something that we are doing. And so to have something like this to have something that you can give and pour yourself into is incredibly powerful. Let me just close with a brief prayer. Lord Jesus, I thank you for this church, for who they are, for their calling. I thank you for their willingness to engage this question, this sometimes difficult question about the different ways that we are wired. And I ask that you bless them as they lean into this. In your name, amen.
Thank you so much for sharing with us on a Sunday morning as we continue down the roads here at BCC. I invite you at this time to stand as you are able in mind, body, and spirit as we sing a song whose music is very, very old.